failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies. Welcome to this edition of Century of Lies. Today we'll hear more from the Hartford, Connecticut Drug Convention, as well as from Mr. Ethan Nadelman, the director of the Drug Policy Alliance, regarding their forthcoming conference in Long Beach, California on November 9, 10, 11, and 12. And we'll also hear from the Legal Affairs Director for the Drug Policy Alliance, Mr. Daniel Abramson, in regards to a recent hearing before the U.S. Supreme Court in regards to a church's sacramental use of the psychedelic drug ayahuasca. Now, let's begin with Mr. Richard Burton of the NAACP speaking at the Hartford Convention on drugs, benefit, and burden.
1954, just after the Brown decision, we had 87,000 African-American inmates in prisons across the country. 50 years after Brown in 2004, we had over 1.5 million. Something's wrong somewhere, and I want you to understand that as we've heard most of the presenters this morning present, I sat and I listened and I said, you know, there's something wrong with the system. So I started to look at some things that I probably feel that I should share with you. And how many in here have heard of the Willie Lynch story? Willie Lynch. Who knows of Willie Lynch? Back in the 1700s, Willie Lynch came to America to tell some of the Southerners how to control their slaves. And he had a plan of action. And he said at that time that 300 years later, you'll still see the side effects of what he's saying. And that holds true. So the prison industrial complex is what I call it today. The birth came from Willie and is still there today. And so when I go in and out of prisons across this country, when I get through the first wall, if you will, or gate, it looks like South Africa to me. That's what it looks like. So as it was indicated, I worked 30 years in the Allentown School District. 95% of the students were white, about 3% African American and 2% Hispanic. In the county prison there, the population was approximately 80% African American. It didn't make sense to me. So I start this session off with that information for one particular reason. I want to thank Cliff for inviting me to be here and for being that visionary along with this city. This is a bold step that you're taking. Much different than cities across this nation because too many people in denial of the situation. In denial, and our babies are dying and mothers are crying. Fathers are trying to make some sense out of it. Law enforcement officers seem to be the enemy because somebody said police brutality is what they do. But they are our sons and our daughters. And we've made it this way, and it needs to be fixed. There is a war on drugs. We know that, right? There is a war on drugs, but you know who the war is on? Us. People that look like me. Let's be for real. There is a war, but the war is on us.
It's hard for a lot of white folks to admit, because there's very few of us wearing those hoods or branding KKK on animate or inanimate objects these days. But this policy of drug prohibition was indeed set up to be a new type of segregation, another type of Jim Crow law, poll tax, in fact, another form of slavery. More than 1 million black people are behind prison bars now, more black people than existed in the South during the time of the Civil War. J. Jack Cole, 14 years as an undercover police officer, has now changed his mind. He's the director of law enforcement against prohibition, LEAP.cc on the net, more than 3,500 members worldwide, and he too spoke at the Hartford Drug Conference.
Mr. Burton just mentioned a couple times here that actually the war is on him and folks that look just like him. Let me tell you, he's absolutely right. The incarceration rate that was mentioned earlier, 726 human beings for every 100,000 population in this country, is just the top of the iceberg here. If you scratch that number a little bit and look underneath, you find this terrible disparity by race. White males are incarcerated in this country today at a rate of 717 per 100,000. Hispanic males are incarcerated at a rate of over 1,200 per 100,000. And black males, well, before I get to what black males are incarcerated at today in this country, let me tell you what they were incarcerated at in South Africa under apartheid in 1993. 859 black males per 100,000 were in prison. In the United States, under drug prohibition in the year 2004, 4,919 black males per 100,000 were in prison. When I hear stuff like that, I can barely stand it. We've got to change this stuff. We have to end this. And there are ways to end it that will really work. If we were to legalize drugs today, just like we legalized alcohol in 1933, overnight we would put all those drug dealers and terrorists out of business. Just like we put Al Capone and all his smuggling cronies out of business. And then if we had the government or some entity produce those drugs and quality control them so that people knew what they were taking, we could end overdoses. Because people don't overdose on drugs because they shoot more and more dope every day in some crazy attempt to get higher and higher. They overdose because they get what's known on the street as a hot shot. Which simply means they don't know how much of that powder they're buying is the real, really the dope, and how much of it is a cutting agent. It's impossible to determine that. When I started buying drugs on the street, heroin on the street, in 1970, it cost $6 for the average user to get high one time. And the heroin that was coming in on the street, according to all of our stats, was 1.5% pure. Now, according to DEA stats, 10 years into the war on drugs, that purity level had more than doubled, and the price had already dipped to $3.90 to get high. DEA has kindly adjusted these prices back over a 20-year period, back to $1980, so you can compare them. And by 1999, 30 years into the war on drugs, the price to get high had dropped, had plummeted to 80 cents in 1980 equivalent dollars. And the reason it was so cheap to get high by 1999 was the purity level of the drugs in that year were coming in street level, 38% pure. Last year, on both coasts, in New York and Los Angeles, street level heroin was coming in at over 60% pure. That's why we're having so many overdoses. We're losing this war. We've been losing this war since it started, and we're not suggesting, us in drug policy, we're not for a moment suggesting that we give up, quit fighting. We're suggesting that we look at this from a different angle.
Here to close out this week's coverage from the Hartford Conference is one of the organizers from efficacy-online.org, Mr. Cliff Thornton.
We just finished a conference called the Illicit Drugs Burden and Policy. The conference had great diversity, both in the audience and on the panel. With the leadership of Mayor Eddie Perez, the importance of the conference hosted by and held in a capital city the invaluable cooperation of Trinity College and the nonprofit foundation of health insurer Aetna, which financed the conference and whose executive director, a Latina attorney, gave a moving keynote address about the non-stigmatizing of addiction, during which she discussed her own struggle with chronic depression, which made this conference a landmark event. I want to share a couple of observations concerning legalization and the conference as a template, model, or prototype for future events. The discussion of legalization and its capacity to alienate or attract people has been debated within the reform movement for years. In the past, I respected the opinion of many who felt the legalization word was a bridge too far beyond the mainstream with the capacity to scare more than persuade. Whatever may have been the reality then, this is now, and in 2006, the need to prove that drug prohibition has failed is fading. It's conceded by the mainstream. The unconverted but open-minded are more concerned with what the alternative looks and sounds like, whether you call it legalization, regulation, normalization, or liberation. I watched a mayor, a judge, state prison commissioners, city councilors, doctors, therapists, recovering addicts, nurses, teachers, Hispanic and black community activists accept the failure of current policy and recognize the need for an alternative involving more treatment and fewer police. Opinions differed, but legalization was mentioned many times as a tool for better public health and safer neighborhoods, not as a worsening of current conditions. While most spectators were sympathetic to reform, many were merely fed up with drug prohibition and struggling for an alternative. Drug prohibition no longer owns the legalization word as a scare tactic in public discourse. Reformists now have a great opportunity to explain legalization in very real terms. This type of conference can be put on and done, packing a comprehensive conference into 2 days. With a big city as the host. Every city has players in this issue. Frustrated health care delivery experts, frustrated community activists, academic experts, addiction survivors, and thinking law enforcement people. To be seen is whether the connections made by the local activists can be harnessed to provide an ongoing source of political organizing and pressure on state and municipal legislators to create change. This city, Hartford, happens to have a mayor who is ready to lead a neighborhood parade without fearing soft-on-crime demagoguery. The real work has just begun. This is Cliff Thornton for Efficacy and the Drug Truth Network.
Next week, I'll be in Long Beach, California, attending the Drug Policy Alliance Conference.
This is Ethan Nadelman. I'm director of the Drug Policy Alliance, country's leading organization, people who believe the war on drugs is doing more harm than good. And we're looking forward to the next International Conference on Drug Policy Reform, which will be in Long Beach, California, just south of L.A., beginning on the evening of Wednesday the 9th, and then we're running all the way through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the 10th, 11th, and 12th. People who want more information about it should be going to our website, drugpolicy.org.
And Ethan, tell us about some of the conferences and the panels that will be part of this.
This is a conference which in some respects follows in the string of conferences that was first organized by the old Drug Policy Foundation beginning in the late 1980s, the two most recent of which were in New Mexico in 2001 and in New Jersey in 2003. But what's different about this conference in part is that this one is much more a collaborative enterprise where Drug Policy Alliance has played the lead role, but where dozens of local and state and national and even international drug policy reform organizations have signed on as partners and sponsors and are playing a more active role in pulling this whole conference together. I can also tell you that this conference, I think, is going to have the biggest attendance. It is going to be the most international. It is going to be the most diverse. It is going to have the best program, and it will probably be the most dynamic such conference ever in the United States. I think the only thing we're going to fall short on compared to past years is we're not going to have a governor to address us as we did in New Mexico in 2001.
Well, Ethan, there's still many skirmishes going on in the media within the halls of government, but there's real progress being made, is there not?
Well, you know, you could just see a nice little development that popped up in Denver just yesterday, where this local initiative to decriminalize or legalize possession of modest amounts passed in a local initiative. I just saw some other news coming out of the Netherlands, where one of the more conservative political parties has joined with the centrist and leftist parties to propose that the government become involved in the cultivation of cannabis. So, you know, every time we start to despair and feel that we're being pushed back, things start turning around again. I'll tell you that my staff were just down in Alabama doing a press conference on a release of a report we did there on the role of the drug war in Alabama, getting a fantastically positive response there. And I can tell you, you know, that in California, you know, the battle keeps chugging along. I mean, in San Francisco, it's a very tough battle over trying to really stabilize the situation with the cannabis, medical cannabis dispensaries. But what's remarkable is to compare the level and caliber and quality of debate and where we are now compared to where we were 5 or 10 years ago. I mean, in that sense, notwithstanding the fairly oppressive political atmosphere that we're operating in right now, I think a lot of people, when they really sort of take a step back and look over a sort of time spectrum, you realize we're actually, things are moving forward. We're definitely a growing movement that's accomplishing more and more.
I'm a newbie, if you will, in the drug reform movement. Been at it 5 or 6 years. And even in that short time, I started as a kind of a cry in the wilderness doing these network shows. And now I find that most of my guests embrace the same thoughts and ideas.
Well, you know, I'll tell you also, not just the United States, but by chance, I was in Bogota, Colombia last week, and I was just in Edinburgh, Scotland yesterday. And in both places, speaking to diverse audiences, and at one point I asked these audiences, one was in a university, one was in a very official setting, yesterday was in the city council hall in Edinburgh, and I asked the people, how many of you actually think that legalization or something close to legalization is probably the optimal approach for dealing with this? And down in Bogota, I'd say 35 to 40% of the hands went up, both among students one day and among people in suits and ties the next. And I'd say that last night when I spoke in Edinburgh, almost the same number. So what we're seeing is a real shift. I think the sense of frustration with the drug war just keeps bubbling over almost wherever you look. And, you know, this still is very much a David versus Goliath struggle. We're definitely we're getting some better and better shots in there.
I know you've announced some of the award winners. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping, Dean, to, you know, announce it there. But what I can tell you is that the biggest award we give, the Richard Dennis Award, is going to go to Mayor Rocky Anderson of Salt Lake City.
Well deserved. I mean,
he, you know, really stepped into the shoes of Kurt Schmoke as the leading mayor in the country stepping out on this issue. You know, he first came to our attention when he called for the getting rid of the DARE program in Salt Lake City because it wasn't working. And he has since pushed forward on harm reduction and overdose prevention and needle exchange. He hosted the recent methamphetamine conference that Luciano Colonna organized a few months ago in Salt Lake City. He's been a passionate speaker about this. So we feel very good about that. You know, the greatest competition of all the awards has typically been the one for the Robert Randall Citizen Action Award, because there's just so many people who've been putting years and years into this struggle. And this time we decided to give the award to DrugSense. And so Mark Rear and Matt Elrod will be the official recipients on behalf of DrugSense. But I think there was a real strong feeling that of all the organizations out there, perhaps no one has done a better job of identifying very specific niches where they can value to the broader drug policy reform movement.
To which, Ethan, I must say, hoorah. I mean, those guys are much deserving of that honor.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a very emotional and wonderful occasion. I can also tell you, Dean, that for people interested now, it took us a long time to finalize this program, but if people go to our website, they will see the comprehensive program on our website, on drugpolicy.org, right now. And for people who have not registered as yet, they should really do so as soon as possible so they don't land up standing on long lines once they get to Long Beach, that are going to span the spectrum. we are going to have everything from harm reduction panels to racism in the war on drugs to how to make the case for legalization to what's happening in England and Europe and the Netherlands and Latin America and around the world and what are the plans for the UNGAS session in 2008, what's going on with methamphetamine, what's going on with ayahuasca. You know, I mean, you name it, there are going to be top-notch panels on all of these subjects. There's going to be trainings. We've also arranged breakout sessions. We've not arranged for any lunchtime speakers so that different drug policy reform organizations can have a few hours on Thursday or Friday in the middle of the day to have their organizational meetings or their board meetings. There'll be evening times, both with scheduled events as well as time. There'll be a film festival with some great things showing. This is going to be, I don't think there's ever been a conference like this in the United States.
Well, Ethan, we'll certainly be covering that conference for both our Cultural Baggage and Century of Lies show for next week. Thank you, and once again, that website, Ethan.
Okay, it's drugpolicy.org, and you'll see the conference all over there. And please spread the word, and, you know, what we figure we're going to have a good A-layer. We'd love to top 1,000 and really turn it into quite a party.
I'm Daniel Abrahamson for the Drug Policy Alliance, one of the nation's leading organizations to have voted to promoting alternative drug policies based on science, reason, compassion, and justice.
Daniel, yesterday there were hearings held about this South American drug, ayahuasca. Tell us your interpretation of what went on.
That's correct. Yesterday, the United States Supreme Court heard arguments in a case pitting the United States Department of Justice and the White House against a church in New Mexico that uses the substance ayahuasca for sacramental purposes as a central part of their religious ceremonies. And ayahuasca is an herbal plant grown traditionally in Brazil that has psychoactive effects when ingested as part of a tea. And the adherents to this church, which is called the UV Church, use ayahuasca as part of their religious practice. The United States government takes the position and argued in court that ayahuasca is a controlled substance that's prohibited from being imported into the United States or used in the United States, and therefore, notwithstanding its religious use by this church, the federal government would like to prohibit its being brought into the United States or used. The church, for its part, claims a First Amendment religious liberty right to use its sacramental religious substances. And so it's an interesting case insofar as it pits the war on drugs against religious liberties on which this nation was founded.
The Justice Department reported this week that the number of people on probation in the U.S. is at a record high, 4.1 million, out of the almost 7 million of our citizens under correctional supervision. The rise in probation numbers isn't surprising. Drug courts, intensive probation, and other alternatives to incarceration have been growing in popularity across the U.S. for more than 15 years. Such programs are intended to help the criminal justice system. These programs can work. Oftentimes, however, there are systemic barriers to success. First, rather than processing offenders more efficiently, the courts end up processing more offenders. It's an effect called net widening, and is evidenced in part by the tremendous and since these courts were introduced back in 1989. As of 2004, over 10% of all criminal arrests were for simple drug possession. Secondly, these courts rely heavily on the personality and commitment of the judges, prosecutors, police, probation officers, and the community. Research shows that in instances where that commitment's not present, recidivism rates are higher. Thirdly, not enough resources are devoted to probation services, particularly drug treatment, yet also other services intended to help offenders gain economic and social stability. Public-private partnerships help, yet they too require resources and significant commitment from government and staff, as well as interest and support from the community. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Another week, another 8 tons of heroin have entered the world market from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan. With market share nearing 90%, the U.S.-Afghan drug trade constitutes an effective global monopoly on heroin. The world's second-largest opium producer is Myanmar, which Washington has identified as an, quote, outpost of tyranny. Lured by promises of U.S. aid, the military dictatorship of Myanmar has embarked on a massive opium eradication campaign, spelling disaster for the many opium farmers in the region. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime warns of a humanitarian crisis. Production is down two-thirds since 2001. Since 2001, U.S. Afghan opium production has soared over 2,200%. In the Philippines, possession of 10 or more grams of heroin invokes a mandatory death sentence. The Philippine terror organization, Abu Sayyaf, is named for the Afghan Mujahideen commander, Abdul Rasul Sayyaf, an accused war criminal said to be responsible for bringing Osama bin Laden to Afghanistan. Warlord Sayyaf is now an esteemed member of the Afghan parliament. In Afghanistan, U.S. military deaths have virtually doubled from 52 last year to at least 92 so far this year. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
This week in drug war history, October 30th, 1995, President Bill Clinton signs legislation passed by Congress rejecting a U.S. sentencing commission move to reduce penalties for crack cocaine offenses to bring them equal with powder cocaine. November 1, 1968, the UK's Advisory Committee on Drug Dependence releases the Wooten Report, recommending that marijuana possession should not be a criminal offense. November 1, 2002, every prosecutor in the United States has sent a letter from the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the National District Attorneys Association urging them to make prosecution of cannabis crimes a high priority and to fight efforts to ease drug laws. November 2, 1951, the Boggs Act nearly quadruples possession for all narcotics offenses and unscientifically lumps marijuana in with narcotic drugs. November 3, 2001, the DEA raids the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center, a medical marijuana distribution facility, arresting its president, Scott Emler. City officials condemned the raid at a press conference attended by more than 100 center members. This is Steve Nolan for the Drug Truth Network.
In case you missed it, this week's Cultural Baggage Show featured a report from the Wonders of Cannabis event out in San Francisco. There were buds on the table, there were tinctures and lotions and potions everywhere. The people came, they saw, they imbibed, and they made it home safely. If you'd like to tune in to that report, please visit our website, which is drugtruth.net.
I want to welcome our newest affiliate, KPFA, out of Berkeley. They're going to carry one of our 420 reports for a while, and I think they'll find that people like it, and they want to hear more. I want to send out congratulations and a hearty handshake to the people of Denver who just voted to legalize the possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana by adults. With any luck, we should have a show for you next week on torture, domestic and international, and I hope to bring you a couple of folks from the Human Rights Watch organization. There is no truth, justice, logic, scientific fact, medical data, moral reason, or religious underpinnings. In fact, no reason whatsoever for the drug war to exist. The drug lords run both sides of the equation. We have been duped. I beg you to please do your part to help end this inquisition. Visit our website, drugprohibition.org. Prohibido istak ivalesco. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Dean Becker asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Our engineer, Philip Duffy.